It's the Burt Cohen Show. What is the dream of America, if not freedom? Freedom that is protected by the Constitution of these United States. That's what it's all about, isn't it? That's what we fight for. And now it does seem that, surprisingly enough, with a president that people kind of thought would be a bit more, well, protective of our constitutional rights, given that he has a reputation as a constitutional scholar, our civil liberties are being encroached on perhaps more than ever before. I know it's a bit surprising. We are talking about the really misnamed Patriot Act. The House and Senate swiftly, quietly passed a four-year extension of the Patriot Act. And today on the Burt Cohen Show, we'll look into what that means for Americans and for America as a nation under the law of the Constitution. Thanks for being with us. And our guest today is Michelle Richardson, a legislative counsel at the Washington Bureau of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. And yes, I am, of course, a card-carrying member, proud to be so. Michelle has been the lead lobbyist for the ACLU on the Patriot Act. Michelle, thanks for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the ACLU, and thank you for fighting so hard for the Patriot Act on Capitol Hill. That must have been an interesting time. I can only imagine, and I hope we get to reveal that to our listeners today, what it was like. The ACLU says, quote, outrageous abuses are being perpetrated under the authority of the Patriot Act. And I hope to talk about some specifics of what those outrageous abuses are. Now, Michelle, all Americans want to be safe and secure. Of course, we want to be free from the threats of more 9/11s. The Patriot Act, I believe, came into existence in direct response to the attacks of 9/11. Don't we want these extra protections? And perhaps you can remind us of how the Patriot Act came to be.
Yes, the Patriot Act was passed by Congress and signed by President Bush 6 weeks after the attacks of September 11th. Congress got to work immediately after the attacks. And at the time, the Patriot Act was overwhelmingly bipartisan. There was only one no vote in the Senate, Senator Feingold, and 67 no votes in the House. But there was overwhelming support for it, that in the time of emergency, the government needed expanded powers. What wasn't debated, though, was the fact that actually a lot of these powers had been laying around for years, that the administration's past had been asking for them and been denied them. And this became an opportunity for them to grab new spying authorities that they had been denied in the past. Now, the question is really, you know, are these tools working to protect Americans, and is it worth that trade-off? And the thing is that the administration has not come forward with evidence that these particular tools have been used to find and prosecute terrorists. So what we've proposed is not that they stop spying on terrorists and spies. Surely they have the right to spy on them. The question is, do they follow the Constitution and make sure that people who aren't suspected of doing anything wrong are protected? We want them to go back to the pre-Patriot days of following the Fourth Amendment, where you have the right to be left alone unless the government can actually say that you are suspected of doing something wrong.
Now, so that's one of the things that does seem to be of concern, is the Fourth Amendment being protected from unreasonable searches and seizures, I believe, is in the Constitution, something like that. Do I have that language right?
That's right. That's right. And that's really the hallmark of the Patriot Act. And then the FISA Amendments Act and a rewrite of the Attorney General Guidelines, the underlying theme for all of these post 9/11 changes over the last 10 years is that instead of focusing the government's very powerful spying tools on suspected terrorists and spies, these tools have been turned on innocent people. And the administration, this administration and the past one, have said publicly and have testified before Congress that that is exactly what they want to do. They want to collect information on people who aren't suspected of doing anything wrong, to see what connections they can find, to data mine the information, to store it for later use. And that is really the hallmark of all of these post 9/11 policies, is the spying on innocent people.
That is kind of amazing. I mean, I suppose on one hand, you can see that, well, spying on, quote, innocent people. What is an innocent person? How is that defined? Perhaps the perpetrators of 9/11 had been innocent of any crimes prior to that outrageous crime, so that I guess the idea would be to find persons of interest, I don't know about any kind of profiling, but find people like that and have a new tool for law enforcement to check these people out, theoretically to protect us from more such attacks. Is that how the Patriot Act has been realistically carried out?
Well, before the Patriot Act, the trigger for using all of these spying tools is that you had to have probable cause,
right,
to believe that the person was either a member of a terrorist group or worked for a foreign government or was a spy. And now the trigger for the tools is just relevant to an investigation. So there no longer is a strict nexus between those who are spied upon and actual suspected wrongdoing, which is what the Fourth Amendment requires. You have the right to be left alone unless there's reason to believe you have done something wrong. So they can go back to that probable cause standard. You know, it's tried and true. It's been developed in the courts over decades and decades of litigation. Law enforcement knows precisely what it means, and it should still be the front-end protection before the government spies on people.
It does seem quite logical. It's worked pretty well so far. We have an amazingly great Constitution, and it's worked very well to protect our freedoms and to balance out security and freedom. And I'm sure you know the source of the quote. I can't remember now about somebody saying people who want to surrender freedom for more security deserve neither. Maybe you know who it was. Maybe you don't.
Well, and you know, that has an interesting proposition to it, that these spying tools actually work, right?
Right.
Here people
That's
say it's worth the trade-off, but the thing is there's really no evidence even that these tools work. And there is, you know, a possibility that collecting all of this information, this innocent information, makes it harder to find the relevant information that would actually point to who the terrorists are and what they are doing. It's sort of the idea of, you know, if you're looking for a needle in a haystack,
I was thinking
at some point
that, yes,
you want to stop dumping the hay on the stack, right?
Yes.
But what we have is the government grabbing more and more information. And, you know, you brought up the actual 9/11 hijackers, and the 9/11 Commission and the reports done by the committees of jurisdiction in the years after 9/11 found that the government had information on these people. It had been collected, but the dots had not been connected to put it all together and have it in a form that was meaningful to really tell what was going on. So even before the Patriot Act, they had enough authority to collect the information, but there were other problems with putting it together, and they did not need the expansive authorities granted to them under the Patriot Act.
I'm reminded of another quote, and I do know the source of this. H.L. Mencken, never assign malicious intention where mere incompetence is the likely culprit.
Right. Well, you know, it's irrelevant, right, for the Fourth Amendment, what their intent is here.
Right.
And we often hear that because the government has a benevolent intent that we should trust them, that
yes.
they don't want your information. They won't use it for bad purposes just to trust them. But, you know, there's not a good intentions caveat to the Fourth Amendment. It is ironclad. There is a wall between us and our government unless we're suspected of doing something wrong. And, you know, I would not question a lot of these folks' intentions. Disagree about the interpretation of the Constitution, but they honestly believe they are doing it to protect our national security. But that's really neither here nor there. Thank goodness the Constitution doesn't rest on any single man's intentions.
We are a nation of laws and not men or women, for that matter. And we are talking on the Bert Cohen Show with Michelle Richardson, Legislative Counsel at the Washington ACLU. And she was the lead lobbyist for the ACLU on the Patriot Act, and definitely need to get into a lot of the details on how it has worked or not worked, how it's been applied, what cases, what are the specific concerns. You were there on the Hill, I believe, and it must have been really interesting. The bill, the reason we're talking about this now is because it was just reauthorized, the so-called Patriot Act. I call it so-called because it seems to me exceptionally unpatriotic. But this was, it was due to expire, I believe, May 27th, and very quickly and quietly, Senate Bill 1038, without any amendment, reauthorized the very controversial surveillance programs. Now, I want to see where the various members stood on this. Senator Mark Udall of, is it Colorado or Utah? I forget which one he's from.
Colorado.
This, his brother's in there as well, I believe. Said, quote, "Americans would be alarmed if they knew how this law is being carried out." I assume he voted well on this. Senator Ron Wyden, a member of the Intelligence Committee, said the executive branch had deviated from a straightforward reading of the text while developing its own theory on what the act allowed. He said, this is Senator Ron Wyden, "I want to deliver a warning. When the American people find out how their government has secretly interpreted the Patriot Act, they will be stunned and they will be angry." Now, we citizens were promised that there would be a week-long real debate on the four-year extension of the Patriot Act. Did that happen? And what happened between Senator Harry Reid and Speaker of the House John Boehner? Did they make a backroom deal on this?
Yes. This sunset actually goes all the way back to 2009. That's when Congress started working on this process, and they could not come to a deal that would appease both the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans. So they keep kicking the can down the road and now been working on this for a year and a half. There were negotiations behind closed doors, and they could not come to an agreement on what a bill should look like. So the folks at the very highest level said, you know what, this process is done. We're just going to reauthorize it for 4 years and we're finished. We're not getting anything out of this. We can't come to an agreement. You know, we've spent enough time on this, so we're done. And that was that. They had the votes for a straight four-year reauthorization without amendment whatsoever.
Well, I know that there were attempts to inject amendments into it to make it less than a four-year, but obviously it didn't happen. And what about that week-long real debate? I didn't see much about that in the papers, and yes, I still read the newspapers. Was there a week-long serious debate on this, or was it kind of just slipped through quietly?
Well, the week debate came from the last time this came up in February, and Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky got the Democratic leader, Harry Reid, to promise to week-long debate and the opportunity for amendments, and that was the plan, of course, until the week of the sunset came up. There was debate here and there last week, but there was not a block of time necessarily set aside for the Patriot Act. A number of members filed amendments, so they could be offered. For example, Senator Leahy, who is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, had a bicameral, bipartisan reform amendment that would have gone in and fixed a number of different places in the Patriot Act and would have required better reporting and better auditing. Bernie Sanders had an amendment to protect library records. Senator Udall and Senator Wyden had amendments to disclose the secret use of law that the Justice Department is doing. But none of those were made in order. They were all held up. And at the end of the day, Rand Paul was the only person who was allowed to offer amendments. He was able to offer two on gun records and bank records, and they both failed.
Fascinating. Now, these other more senior senators, how is it that they were shut out of the process? Is that Harry Reid? I know that it's a labyrinthine process there, and it certainly can be, I don't want to say manipulated, but I frankly can't think of another word, in terms of procedure for allowing amendments in. Was it Harry Reid who really clamped down on that? And if so, why?
You know, it is not clear to us as outsiders exactly everything that happened behind closed doors. We understand that Republican leader Mitch McConnell did, for example, object to Chairman Leahy from offering his amendment. But, you know, what we would hope is that they would be brought to the floor anyways, really? And they would have to vote against it, that there would be no secret holds on amendments, and that they would be put to the test. And if they oppose it, they should have to do so publicly, yes, on the record, and it should not happen behind closed doors. I think part of what happened, and this is my best guess from working up here, is that they came up on that sunset, which was midnight, Thursday night, and they said to the members, you know, if we give you time to offer these amendments and debate them, the Patriot Act will sunset. These three sections will lapse. Now, your amendments are going to fail anyways. Do you want to take that risk? Why should we take the hit over this if this is not going to work in the end? And I think you probably had the members say, okay, fine. So, go ahead. We won't offer our amendments.
So you're suggesting that politics intervened in government. I'm shocked.
And, you know, like I said, this sunset has been in the works since 2009. This particular reauthorization has been in effect since February. So they've had 3 months this time around to debate this, but they waited to the last minute. Mm-hmm. They filed the bill at the precise moment, you know, to have a certain number of hours and that they would run themselves right up against the sunset. If they wanted the opportunity for full debate and for the consideration of amendments, they would have started this earlier. It was completely in their power to do this in a different way that would have allowed for more debate and to allow for amendments to actually come to the floor for a vote.
Amazing. And I want to talk about, some of the personalities involved here. Senator Feinstein, as you said, from California, originally voted against the Patriot Act. Where was she this time?
She voted for reauthorization. Senator Feinstein is now the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and has been largely, you know, pro-government authority when it comes to spying authorities and has backed all of the administration's proposals and the Bush administration's too when it has come to the Patriot Act or the FISA Amendments Act of 2008, which was another major spying rewrite. She did, however, endorse some very moderate changes. She supported Chairman Leahy's bill that would have required some auditing, some oversight of the Patriot Act. But again, that did not come to the floor for a vote.
So she ended up voting. What was the final vote in the Senate? I didn't get that information.
It was 72-23. Yes, you know, we're disappointed that we did not get changes. But, you know, in 2001, the original Patriot Act, there was only one no vote. And then in 2006, when they did the major reauthorization, then there was only 10. And now we've more than doubled that, and we're at 23. And that includes four Republicans. We're getting our first Republican votes against the Patriot Act. So public opinion is changing. Congress is moving in the right direction on this. And, you know, we'll pick up more votes next time, too. We'll be back on this in 4 years, in 2015, and we'll pick up more votes then, and we'll have an even better case for amendment at that point.
Meanwhile, some Americans will probably be hurt. Some innocent Americans will probably be adversely affected by this law in that four-year period. You do what you can and make progress slowly, but perhaps steadily. Now, Rand Paul is a new kid on the block, but he had a rather strong role in the debate. He really was outstanding on there. What were his objections? And I wonder if, and speaking to that, he's a Tea Party guy. I didn't hear much from the Tea Party on this debate at all. Tell us about Rand Paul on this.
Yes, Rand Paul made his first statements back in February, and he said that he opposed a number of different things from the Patriot Act, things like government access to bank records or gun records, or making it too easy to get a wiretap that didn't clearly state the person who was going to be tapped. And that while he would sort of agree to that process and allow for a three-month reauthorization, when it came back this May, he wanted at least a week debate. He wanted the opportunity to offer amendments. And so he did file amendments that would have addressed a number of different sections in the Patriot Act. Most of them were not made in order. He personally objected to what they call a time agreement, which would have sped everything up and really exacted all of those 30 hours that he is entitled to under the rules, and drew this out so that it was almost a week-long debate at the end of the day, because he fought so hard and refused to let this go without some votes.
Well, so what about his base? He's a Tea Party guy, and certainly one of the few consistent messages we've heard from the Tea Party is they don't like big government. They don't want it's a traditional fear that government can get too big and impose and impinge on the freedom of our citizens. And it would seem to me that that's exactly what this problem is here. Has the Tea Party made much noise on this, or is it not on their screen?
You know, certain parts of the Tea Party have been involved in this. And it's hard to say because the Tea Party isn't a national group. There isn't a national Tea Party. It's run locally. So the Patriot Act, like most issues, it sort of comes and goes depending on whether the local folks particularly care about it and want to be organized. We did work with the Campaign for Liberty, which is a Tea Party-ish group that was created out of the Ron Paul presidential campaign, and they're still very involved in national politics. And they were active on this. They did organize their members. They called Capitol Hill. They wrote letters and sent emails, and I think they were somewhat instrumental in getting more no votes than we've seen in the past, especially for Republicans. You know, in the Senate, besides Rand Paul, we also got Dean Heller of Nevada, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Senator Lee from Utah, all to vote no. And I think that is certainly as a result of the rise of Tea Party influence. You know, you can look at someone like Lisa Murkowski. She's been a target on the Patriot Act for years. You know, she's in a Western state. It's a very libertarian state. You know, she was on the short list of Republicans who should have been voting no this entire time. But this was the first time. This go around was the first time that she voted no after voting yes over and over again over the years. And I think that really points to the influence of the Tea Party.
Hey, let's hear it for the Tea Party every now and then. I mean, I tend toward the left, but I also love the Constitution of the United States. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm certainly a card-carrying member of the ACLU. In fact, I'm on the board of directors of the local state civil liberties union. It's pretty important. And, you know, I think this is something where right and left should agree. I don't know if there was, certainly I'm sure Bernie Sanders, who I guess is the left in the U.S. Senate, he must have spoken out quite a bit against it. But I wonder about the other, you know, more traditional liberal types. It sounds like they had their misgivings, but in the final analysis, when push came to shove, as I'm sure it did, I'm guessing, did vote for the extension of the so-called Patriot Act, correct?
Yes. Yes. It's still pretty partisan.
Hmm.
You know, a majority of Republicans support it. Then there is a split within the Democratic Party.
Uh-huh.
Of support or not, but opposition is becoming more and more bipartisan, and it is growing. We are growing in numbers.
That's nice to see bipartisanship every now and then. My goodness, people complain about that quite a bit, and partisanship can be put aside on the basis of defending our traditional American liberties, that's a very good thing. You are listening to The Burt Cohen Show, and our guest today is Michelle Richardson, legislative counsel with the ACLU in Washington, D.C., I'm sure air-conditioned Washington, D.C., as
yes.
we speak. And what about Barack Obama? One of the things that got a lot of people excited about him in 2007, 2008, was that he was a constitutional law scholar. My impression is perhaps things have gotten worse under President Obama. He's clamped down quite a bit on leakers. And we always thought that, when I talk about plumbing leaks, you think of Richard Nixon, of course. But where has Obama been on this? Is he gung-ho Patriot Act? It certainly appears that he is. And how can he be a constitutional law scholar and be for these fairly obvious encroachments on the Fourth Amendment?
You know, we've seen largely a continuation of the Bush administration's policy on the Patriot Act. The Obama administration did agree to some changes in the Patriot Act. As I mentioned before, Senator Leahy, through the Judiciary Committee, worked on a reform bill that was very modest. It wouldn't have really limited the government's spying authorities so much that it would have put in some more auditing and oversight provisions for the authorities they already have. And Senator Leahy did negotiate that with the administration. And in the last Congress, the administration did endorse that bill. And to their credit, they did agree to voluntarily implement some of those changes, even without legislation passing. However, on the bigger issue of who do we spy on? Do we spy on people who haven't done anything wrong? Do we collect the information of innocent Americans for data mining purposes to put into our databases? They have continued the last administration's approach that you do not have privacy in your records. They are fair game. They can be collected in bulk, even if you aren't suspected of doing anything wrong, and then the government can keep them indefinitely and use them as they see fit.
Wow. That's quite a divergence. Back in, when Nixon was president, had I been told that there would be a Democrat in the White House in the 21st century, it sounds like it's even worse than the clearly paranoid Richard Nixon, and more sophisticated, certainly. I'm concerned among many things. You know, people may be concerned, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. What the heck? Why do I care? But there was this, and I believe it was part of the Patriot Act, the so-called Patriot Act, the retroactive telecom immunity, which was that if a telecommunications company, correct me if I'm wrong here, refused to do illegal surveillance, then they would be in trouble. And my understanding is the only major telecommunications company, Qwest, CEO to not cooperate with the unconstitutional, possibly illegal surveillance is now in federal prison. That, it seems to me, shows that, hey, you know what, this is kind of dangerous stuff. It was the retroactive telecommunications immunity that was, you know, Obama was against granting them immunity. Was that part of this, or is that a more expansive part of the national security state, of which I'm worried?
You know, that is not part of the Patriot Act proper. It's part of the FISA Amendments Act, which is a whole other rewrite that happened in the summer of 2008. And then Senator Obama did vote for it. So he did vote for the immunity for the companies that broke the law and participated in the George Bush so-called terrorist surveillance program, which was warrantless surveillance starting not long after 9/11, and it continued up into 2007. And the ACLU and other organization sued on behalf of customers to assert their rights and get a declaration that those companies violated the law when they didn't demand a warrant before wiretapping. So in 2008, that law passed. They had immunity. All of the cases have been kicked out of court. And so now there is absolutely no accountability for the warrantless wiretapping program. Clearly, the administration is not going after these companies for violating the law. We can no longer assert ourselves in court, so there just will not be accountability for that warrantless wiretapping program.
I would think most Americans really are not comfortable with warrantless wiretapping. That's something that the old Soviet Union would have at least looked like they were doing. That's something those bad guys over there do that speak with a funny accent, but not us. You know.
Well,
go ahead.
I was going to say the travesty of the situation is that Congress went ahead and legalized the program. Instead of investigating and bringing the program to light and putting an end to it and holding people accountable, Congress spent 2 years debating how to legalize the program and write warrantless wiretapping into the law. And they did so in that 2008 bill, the FISA Amendments Act. It is actually subject to a sunset also and will be up next year. So this time next year, we'll be debating the FISA Amendments Act, which allows the government to do warrantless surveillance of international communications. Even if one end is in the United States, they no longer need to get individualized warrants that name a person or a number. They can do bulk collection and do big grabs as long as it's international. And, you know, frankly, it probably makes the Patriot Act look quaint. The amount of information they can collect under this new 2008 program is just absolutely astounding. The amount of email and phone calls that the NSA can pick up is truly huge, and they keep building out their capacity to collect more and more. And, you know, next year we'll hopefully see Congress dig in and get more information and make it public about how that program is actually being implemented.
Wow. Let's hope that that will be looked into and perhaps even stopped. It just seems so like the Stasi of East Germany, just listening to everything. And as you said, if you're looking for a needle in a haystack, piling more bales of hay in there, not generally a good idea. And they seem, I mean, the amount of data you're describing is just astounding. I can't imagine trying to find some real terrorist threats in that. We are talking about the extension, the four-year extension of the so-called Patriot Act with our guest on the Burt Cohen Show, Michelle Richardson, legislative counsel with the ACLU down in Washington, D.C. Now, a couple of the more controversial sections of the so-called Patriot Act, there's Section 215. What is that, and why should we care?
Section 215 of the Patriot Act is also known as the library provision, and it is a secret court order for any tangible thing that the government says is relevant to an investigation. So it's a secret court subpoena. Before the Patriot Act, They had the secret court subpoenas, but they could only get information on suspected terrorists and spies. Post-Patriot Act, now that they have this so-called relevance standard, they can get information on anyone, even people who aren't suspected of doing anything wrong. And it can be any tangible thing. So it can be your library records. It could be medical records. It could be the hard drive on your computer. It could be an entire database of information. It could be a list of everyone who visits a certain website. There's really no limitation in the law about what these secret court orders can obtain. And so we have, you know, not asked that it be necessarily repealed, but they insert protections into the statute so that there's actually some sort of nexus between the information they're collecting and a suspected terrorist, so that they can no longer go on fishing expeditions that grab vast amounts of data about innocent people.
Wow.
Yes, and it's a secret. It's a secret tool. So we don't know exactly how it's being used, and the administration has not publicly, this administration or the last one, explained exactly what they're getting with these tools. But there are a couple of things that we should point out. One is that the use of these have quintupled in the last year. In 2009, they used only 21 of these. But last year, in 2010, it was just revealed that that number went up to 96. They're using almost five times as many 215 orders as they used to. So they're doing something aggressive here. They're collecting more information. And there is, you know, Congress is not asking questions about where these new orders are going, what type of information they're getting. The other thing about 215 is that this is the section that Senators Udall and Wyden have particularly flagged for abuse. When they went to the floor, they spoke extensively about the Justice Department having secret law. Interpretations of the Patriot Act, and particularly this section, 215, that would greatly offend Americans if they knew about it. Something that they are interpreting that seems to contradict what we're all publicly talking about and goes beyond sort of what the common understanding of these tools are. So it's very likely that even as I described it, as broad as it is, they're using it in even more aggressive and more creative ways to get things perhaps that are even irrelevant that we would, that the average person would think was irrelevant to an investigation.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of our taxpayer dollars are being spent on this national security state, which seems to have just mushroomed beyond belief and beyond people's knowledge, all that secret stuff. Now, I wonder if I heard last year in Minnesota, the FBI subpoenaed about 25 activists in Minnesota during investigations of material support for terrorism, allegedly. And I wonder if this was part. These were peace activists. These were not in any way, shape, or form terrorists, but the FBI was using the anti-terrorism resources to spy on activists in the U.S. Is this part of the so-called Patriot Act? Are they enabled to do that through this particular act?
Yes. They are. It's under what they call the material support statutes, which criminalizes giving anything of value to a terrorist organization or groups who conduct terrorist activities. And it was amended by the Patriot Act. It's actually been amended many, many times over the decades. Congress keeps changing the statute. But the problem was, last year, the statute finally went up to the Supreme Court, and they had to make a ruling about how broad it was and whether people engaging in peaceful activities, just because they're coordinated with some of these groups, you know, whether those peaceful activities could also be criminalized. And the Supreme Court said yes, that coordinating with these groups, even for peaceful activities, you know, sometimes humanitarian aid or working for their political recognition, things like that, that, you know, are actually protected by humanitarian and international law, could be criminalized by our government. And so the concern is with these peace activists is that by working with some overseas groups, overseas political groups, that they are now being investigated, even though they may not have actually done anything to further terrorism.
And isn't it the case that some of these people's homes got raided, that some law enforcement officials ransacked their homes?
Yes. Some of them were subpoenaed to testify. Some of them also had their homes searched, and they reported that, you know, all of their files were gone through. Even family pictures were taken from their home.
Could it be possible that, it's hard to believe, but so much of this is hard to believe, that there may be powers in government behind all this that really see the peace activists as the real threat to the political order? It's kind of, I don't even want to say that, but it does kind of seem that. And just over Memorial Day weekend, people who were apparently dancing at the Jefferson Memorial were arrested for dancing. And, you know, because perhaps it didn't fit the spirit of Memorial Day, but what the heck is going on here? Is the FBI missing the real terrorists by focusing on anti-war activists?
Yes, and, you know, that's another problem, is every minute spent focusing on dissidents is time that could have been spent tracking real terrorists. And you could see since 9/11, the spying on and infiltration of peace activists, environmentalists, Quakers has just skyrocketed. And it's not been only the FBI, but the Department of Homeland Security and state and local police. They basically had tons of money dumped on them, right?
Yes.
9/11 money. They were told there are terrorists hiding behind every corner, and they didn't know what to do with it. And so they started targeting dissidents as troublemakers, as people who could possibly be terrorists. And you see the information they collect, and it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, they get the membership lists, they go into meetings, they sit down and they take notes about who's saying what, and then it's put into government databases where federal employees have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really ridiculous, and it's so counterproductive. That time really could be spent on real law enforcement activities that could make people safe.
Absolutely amazing, and that your tax dollars at work here, folks. We are talking with Michelle Richardson, legislative counsel for the ACLU, about the extension of the so-called Patriot Act. And I wonder who is, there's of course a lot of money involved here, and not to be cynical or anything, but oftentimes it appears that the government of the United States is largely owned or leased by a few powerful moneyed interests. Are moneyed interests behind the Patriot Act the banking houses or the finance system? I'm trying to figure out what's the secret motivation for all this secret stuff.
Well, the intelligence budget is classified. So we as outsiders don't even really know how much money is spent on spying programs like this. And there's really no way for us to find out how much money is going into it. But, you know, there are concerns about, especially with the spying, that the telecommunications industry is, you know, so close to the government. They're so closely regulated, and they donate so much money that, you know, for example, when the warrantless wiretapping program was proposed to them, you know, they were a little too easy to say, yes, go ahead. As you mentioned, only one company that we know of refused to participate in the warrantless wiretapping.
Yeah, he went to jail.
You know, so they have many incentives just to go along with government requests for information and, you know, really very little incentive to stand up for our rights as consumers.
Well, with the you know, the economy of the world these days so intertwined, it seems like the financial system is supranational. It's not American. It's supranational. So perhaps I'm just guessing, you know, maybe they have some reason to be wanting to be able to spy on people. Maybe it's not them. One can always suspect moneyed interests behind so much these days in the United States. Either that, or it could be as simple as a very large Patriot Act-related bureaucracy trying to CYA, you know, cover their own butts here and just protect their jobs. I don't know how big of a bureaucracy it is that's been built up since 9/11.
Right. And I think it's all of those forces coming together. I think you have people who sincerely believe these types of things will protect our national security. I think you have pro-government people who see this as an opportunity to snatch more power while we are in, you know, a very heightened emotional state, a state of emergency after 9/11. I think you see the corporations who see a way to make $1 billion out of building the next technology that will supposedly find terrorists, the technology that will supposedly sort through all the emails and phone calls that the government is collecting. And when those forces come together, you know, you have a very, very powerful juggernaut in support of things like the Patriot Act and the FISA Amendments Act, and a lot of momentum to keep these sorts of programs going.
Yeah, I wasn't far off. What a surprise. Sneak and Peek. Isn't that a lovely name? My understanding that as part of the Patriot Act is something not officially called Sneak and Peek, but it's part of it where without search warrants, they can physically go into people's homes and do a little sneak and peek. And my understanding is that a very, very small portion of Patriot Act-related sneak and peek searches have to do with terrorism. I believe, if my information is correct, in 2008, 62% of sneak and peek searches were for drugs, illegal drugs, and 0.4%, less than half of 1%, had to do with anything like terrorism. Was fiscal year 2008 a fluke, or has it gotten better or worse with regard to the use of the sneak and peek tactics, which seem just horrendous and terribly anti-American? What's the status of that now, the use of sneak and peek, and how much it's gone after mm-hmm. actual terrorism?
Well, the sneak and peek changes in the Patriot Act were permanent. They were never subject to the sunset, so they've been permanent now for almost 10 years. And they are warrants. They do have to get a warrant for a sneak and peek search. But what they do is they get permission from the court not to notify you about the search. Because part of the Fourth Amendment is that you are contemporaneously notified that the government is searching you, so you can assert your rights on the spot. With this, they get, like, go and do a little sneak and peek, right, and search you without telling you, sometimes for months or years, so you're never able to assert your rights and defend yourself in this investigation, right? And you are correct that despite it being part of the Patriot Act and the Bush administration touting it as a very crucial tool in the war on terror, it is not used in terrorism investigations. It is used for drug crimes and immigration cases. They use more and more every year. I think the last number I saw was a little over 1,000 of them being used every year to do the sneak and peek searches.
1,000, which was that for used for sneak and peek?
Yes, 1,000 sneak and peek searches for a calendar year. I think it was 2010.
Uh-huh. And
so they're doing more and more of these, and sadly it is a permanent part of the law.
Hmm.
Though Congress has not gone back and looked at it. And that's the problem with making these things permanent, is once they're on the books, Congress doesn't really go back to them and conduct oversight. And so there really hasn't been, they haven't been called out on their use of the sneak and peek searches.
So again, virtually none of it is being used for anything like terrorism. I believe in 2009, drugs were almost 74% of the cases, fraud 4.8%, extortion, racketeering 3.2%, terrorism 0.5%. Is it fair to say, Michelle, that the Patriot Act is overwhelmingly being used, even though it was sold to us as a new tool to fight terrorism, to protect our freedoms? After all, is the Patriot Act. It's overwhelmingly being used to fight the drug war and to conduct criminal investigations against American citizens all on the sly. Is that really what it's about now, the drug war and spying on people without our knowing?
You know, I think if you're talking about the sneak and peek tool particularly, yes. I think the rest of the Patriot Act, you know, a lot of it did go in and amend the intelligence laws that can't be used necessarily for drug cases. There has to be some sort of foreign nexus to trigger those tools. But, you know, when the administration has had to justify these tools, their testimony to Congress was not about catching terrorists. It was doing the surveillance, but then coming across, for example, a drug violation or an immigration violation. And they point to those drug and immigration convictions or deportations as successful uses of the Patriot Act.
Silly me. I thought the Patriot Act was about fighting terrorism. Ridiculous. And, you know, in a final analysis, you know, if you look at a big picture, the sort of macro picture about, you know, freedom, what the Constitution is about, there's something called the national security state. And perhaps that can be defined a little bit, what the national security state is and why, again, if I'm not doing anything wrong, what's wrong with a national security state? How much does the concept of a national security state, however it's defined, how much does that chafe with traditional constitutional liberties that are protected by that sacred document?
Yes. You know, our Fourth Amendment protects our right to privacy. We have the right to be let alone unless we are suspected of doing something wrong. And then the government must go to court and get a warrant and prove to a neutral judge why they think we've done something wrong before they can invade our privacy. However, the national security state that's been built out over the last decade since 9/11 turns the Fourth Amendment on its head and instead says, well, actually, we're going to collect all of this information, innocent information on people who aren't suspected of doing anything wrong, sift through it, and hopefully, you know, as they say, connect the dots with all of this innocent information. And as you said, they often say, well, if you aren't doing anything wrong, what's the problem, right? Well, that's the thing. I haven't done anything wrong. You should not have access to my information. Even if it's innocent information, even if it's not embarrassing, it's mine. And the Fourth Amendment says it's, you know, mine and it's private, and you should not have access to it. End of story. You know, innocent people do not need to justify to the government why they deserve privacy. It is inherent in our Constitution for over 200 years, period.
Hmm. And I would think that one thing that you know, I disagree with the Tea Party on a lot of things, but the idea, what the anger, I think a lot of it is quite legitimate, like, who is this government working for? Are we now, we the people, suddenly subjects of our government? Or I always thought that we hired the government to work for us, to work for the common good, to protect our freedoms, to guarantee our security. And it appears that this is, as you say, perhaps being turned on its head, that it's a real shift, seismic shift in what government is, that we the people are now just, you know, subjects at the whims and will of this very large, very powerful, very intrusive government that seems to just ignore the Constitution. Yikes. What can we do between now and the next election, Michelle?
That's a good question. Patriot, per se, will not be voted on for several more years. But something to flag for your listeners is cybersecurity. This is the next big thing coming up in Congress. It's very likely that Congress will vote on giving the administration new cybersecurity powers this year. So keep an eye out for that and make sure that whatever Congress passes, that it doesn't give the government new authorities to collect information now in the name of cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity, meaning for those of us who are still kind of in the 20th century, that's communications, digital communications over all this newfangled internet, stuff like
yes.
that, right?
Yes, security of our internet systems.
Yes.
You know, some say that they're really vulnerable to attack from terrorists and foreign governments. And the question
right.
is, what's the response, you know?
Yeah.
Do you trust these companies to secure their own internet networks, or do you give the government access to the internet?
Uh-huh. That puts it in clear perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle Richardson, thank you so much for spending time with us today on The Burt Cohen Show. And, of course, people can go to the ACLU website. What is that, ACLU.org?
Yes.
Simple enough. Yikes. Thank you so much for being with us
Thank
again
you.
On the Burt Cohen Show. Best of luck with your activities.
Thank you.
And do email me, Burt@BurtCohen.com. This is about being a patriot. Little Stephen, thanks for listening.
The righteous, and the river opens for the righteous. The river opens for the righteous, and the river opens for the righteous. And the river opens for the righteous, and the river opens for the righteous. And the river opens for the righteous.
And the river opens for the righteous. And the river opens for the righteous.